Hey Brian, hey Rick, Shooter McGavin here on a Masters weekend, day two. Wow. So I heard your From the Tips podcast is kind of badass.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of From the Tips. It is me, your boy Brian, always joined by my fantastic co-host Rick Landis. How we doing, good buddy?
I'm doing swell. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay. Got to go out golfing this weekend, which was nice. Ellie and I, with her parents, golfed the course we'll be getting married at in Downingtown Country Club. It's Ron Jaworski course. Really nice course. Apparently, if a course has any amount of sand on it, I will find myself in that sand. It was borderline ridiculous how often I wound up in there. I did get out every single time, though. But, you know, like, out just to me means on grass.
Yeah, just not on sand
just
anymore.
Just not in sand again. There's nothing more demoralizing than the second sand shot.
Yeah.
Right? That just hurts way more. That, like, I say it hurts more than three putting. Like, I can three putt, walk away, and forget about it. When I hit that one sand shot and it just rolls right back down to where I originally was.
Yeah.
Completely defeating.
Yeah, that hurts for sure.
It was an awesome course. Got to eat there too, so that was great. And then just golfed a little bit with some buddies on Sunday too. So I was able to get out and get after it this weekend. Nice. What'd you get up to?
Not too much. I was in Cape May / what is that, Ocean City, I guess, for the string band like festival or something. I don't know. There was something going on with the string bands
for the Mummers.
Yeah. So Gina's dad was playing down there, so we went down for the day. Went to the Cape May Zoo, did that, and then opened the pool on Sunday. So
opened up the pool on Sunday. Well, I'm sure that that went out with no issues whatsoever.
Yeah, pretty much about as smooth of a opening as you can get. No half pulls in the backyard or anything. Just straight up.
Tell you what.
Open and good to go.
You know what the best thing for a pool is? Water. So yeah,
exactly.
If there's more, that must be better.
Or
right?
Is better. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's how that works.
If there's more water next to the pool, I'm sure that's going to be the best. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that today it's finally raining here in the northeastern states. It has been a drought for quite some time,
like 2 months.
Yeah, so it's good to get some rain out here. However, with the rain, it then brings the humidity, which is not super cool. I am
not at all
sweating right now. Rick has gone full shirtless for the episode.
Yes,
that's I respect right the move. You got to do what you got to do.
I have the AC on now, and we're still rocking the shirtless.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have AC here, so I'm just I got windows open, and
as much as you can with the rain,
and really just trying to like circulate some airflow in this bad boy. It's tough out here, man. It's tough out here. What's the temp right now? It feels like 90, 76. Okay, not great, but
I got 72 here.
Yeah, I got 76. So
with 80% humidity.
Yowzas. At that point, like at 80% humidity, are we just like in water, right? obviously I get it because of the rain, that makes sense. 80% humidity. Yeah. But like, could you imagine a day where it's like 92% humidity? Are we just in water at that point?
I think so.
Like
underwater.
Underwater has to be 100%, right? Like that's 100% humidity is in water.
Is it?
That feels right, right? Like,
I don't know how humidity works.
Hold on. has there?
I just know the word.
Been 100% humidity. Surprisingly, yes. The condition is known as supersaturation. At any given temperature and air pressure, a specific maximum amount of water vapor in the air will produce a relative humidity of 100%. I hate to ask because like I really don't want to know. I don't want to know what that feels like.
Well, it's about to get up to 90% at about 8:15. My phone is saying. So.
Ooh, golly.
So you can at least get close to feeling it.
And what's great is I have a roller hockey game tonight, and they don't turn on the air conditioning for us old men in there. I'm going to lose so much weight tonight.
Yeah, you better bring some water with you.
Be sweating buckets. So it's getting hot out here, which is what that's a good thing though, because it means it's the summer. Well, all right, Rick, let's start the episode off right with the old what happened in sports history. What do you got?
So we're gonna take a trip down memory lane all the way to 1896.
Oh.
On June 13th in 1896, we had the British Open men's golf at Murfield. Okay. Harry Vardon of Jersey wins his first of six open titles by four strokes in, can you guess how long the playoff was? If you don't already know.
Tell me it was like 12 holes, something like that.
If that's what you're saying is a lot, then you're going to be shocked when I tell you it was a 36-hole playoff.
Oh, my God. 36 holes.
Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, you figure a normal weekend. I don't know if it was the same in 1896. It might have been a little shorter. But, like, can you imagine a 36-hole playoff now? They would just be like, no, just forget about it.
You know what? We're going to cut the trophy in half. You take one half home. You take
someone get a saw.
Yeah, that's that. Oh my God. Could you have,
yeah,
like after 18, another 36?
Yeah.
That's, I look, and I'll never say there's too much golf to be played.
That's
at some golf point in the span of 24 hours, there has to be a limit on golf holes. That might be it. That could be it. I feel like my back would be just a limp noodle.
Oh yeah, you're just done for.
I'd have nothing to
sit down for.
The next couple of days would be just
at least
horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially back then, they didn't even know what stretching was, you know? Like, they're not even doing anything to right the ship of their body.
Yeah, they're just drinking beer and playing golf.
They're like, "Oh, if I lay down perfectly still for a couple hours, that'll fix it right up, right?"
Uh-huh.
The muscles totally aren't going to seize in that position and I won't be able to move. That's science, I think.
So moving on into the 1930s, 1937, we have Joe DiMaggio hitting three consecutive home runs against the St. Louis Browns.
Well, I'll be damned. St. Louis Browns.
Yep.
I wonder what they wind up trying. Would they wind up being the Cardinals or they get shipped off to another city? It is what it is.
I do not know.
Yes, 1930s baseball, a true mystery to mankind. The wildest thing, there's this podcast that I listen to. It's called The Dirty Inning, and they basically just, like, they go through history and talk about the worst Phillies games or innings in their history, which there's a lot of because they're the most losingest franchise in sports history.
Yeah.
And one of the segments they do every episode is they just read the paper from that day.
That's awesome.
And the wild shit in the newspaper back in the 30s. There was like the ads for like remedies. Hilarious. There's like one and it's like Albert's foot cream and head medication. And it's things like that where you clearly knew that their grip on science was so little.
Yeah.
So little. He's like, this is a rash cream and it'll help your upset stomach. There you go. And you can shave with it.
Here's a good one that, and not necessarily, I guess good is a bad word to use. Here's an interesting one that we're going to hope doesn't have a repeat this year at the U.S. Open.
Okay.
Can you guess what happened at the 1991 U.S. Open? Do you happen to know what happened at that Open?
Not off the top of my head, for certain. What happened to the 1991 U.S. Open?
So this is the big headline from the 1991 U.S. Open. A spectator is killed by lightning.
Oh, my God. Whoa.
So, yeah, hopefully.
Wait, that was 1991. It's not like technology was that far off when we... That's crazy.
Yeah, hopefully we don't have a repeat of that. That's an interesting one. I didn't even know that happened. So there's a fun fact for you.
Yeah, that's crazy. Could you imagine that happening? I mean, I guess people almost got killed by trees.
Yeah.
That almost happened. But wow, struck by lightning and killed at the 1991 US Open.
Yeah.
Where was the 1991 US Open?
I'm not sure.
Was it in a high lightning area? 1991
It was, oh, that brought up
That's,
tennis.
yep, brought up tennis.
No
That's interesting to me.
one cares about
No
tennis.
one gives a hoot about tennis. Hazeltine in
In
Minnesota.
Minnesota, interesting.
I'm going to look up 1991 US Open golf death.
Just got Minnesota.
Oh, there were survivors. Apparently, this affected multiple people.
Oh,
Goodness
interesting.
gracious.
Well, again, hopefully we don't have a repeat of that. Just an interesting fact for you to tell your friends that someone died at the US Open.
Just a factoid. And you want to know what? You don't have to tell your friends what the date is, even though it is the 1991 US Open. You can be like, at the US Open, somebody died from lightning strike. And then you confuse everybody. Rick, I think before we get into the golf here, I think we'd be amiss for at least our listenership to not talk about the collapse of 95. I feel like that has to be brought up. For those of you that don't know, or you're not within the Philadelphia region, or you're not on the East Coast, just a part of 95 the other day had a tanker truck catch fire underneath it and then subsequently collapse, absolutely putting a hole on the northbound side of the highway, subsequently making 95 unusable in that stretch, and apparently is going to take multiple months, according to the governor, to get that bad boy fixed. Rick, do you have any comment?
Yeah, it's gonna make getting to Phillies games really hard because that's usually the way that I take.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be increasingly difficult to get to those games now, at least on time, to ever get there on time.
It was bad enough when it was just like construction was happening, but there was still lanes open. Now it's just not even open.
Yeah, it wasn't, even when there was just regular traffic, when there wasn't a hole in the road, it was still tough. Now everybody's gonna be trying to get over into Jersey, going south and coming back. It's gonna be an entire mess. And here's my thing, Rick, right? I think this is a fucking conspiracy theory. Okay. I just don't understand how a tanker just so happened to catch fire directly underneath 95, and we can't find the driver of this truck. Okay, still haven't found the guy that drove the truck. Just conveniently directly beneath the bridge, right? Also, I'm pretty sure PennDOT and the state were supposed to be done the 95 construction that's been going on for a decade in the next 2 years or so. And maybe they thought, you want to know what we really enjoy? Taking more money in taxes and telling people it's because of the 95 thing, right? So why don't we just put a hole in it? Then nobody can get mad at us for continuing the rest longer than we're supposed to, because, well, we had a pretty big emergency. Rick, I'm telling you, I think the mafia is behind
Listen, this is a whole off-air conversation that we can have if you want, because this is just a piece of the puzzle, my friend.
That's
There has been stuff going on all year, all past year and a half of random things in big cities that are important. We don't have to get into details. It's modern warfare. I mean, I'm just saying, I feel like it's not a coincidence that it's always vehicles or transportation in the case of the train that got derailed, multiple trains that got derailed, and just put a cloud of toxic smoke into the air, and now we have this 95 thing. We can have this whole 3 hour conversation, just you and me, off air. But yes, there is multiple theories behind what's going on right now. I haven't heard the mafia one. I'm in on it, but there's a lot, And you don't want me getting stuck down that rabbit hole because we're never going to get to the RBC Canadian Open, the US Open, or even the FedEx Cup, because I'll probably still be talking about it by the time that happens if we start talking about it right now.
This is why I bring this stuff up, though, because I know how into conspiracy theories you are. And I fucking knew as soon as I saw that come across, I was like, I guarantee you, Rick is already down the rabbit hole on what this might be. He's got
it's not a coincidence. Three working theories. It's totally not a coincidence.
There's no way, right?
We
there's zero chance that that just happens coincidentally. Are you kidding? I don't think so. No. Open your eyes, people. Open your eyes.
Yeah. We'll have this conversation off air.
I can't wait to get a text from John when he listens to this episode. He's immediately going to text us. You know, birds or cameras from the government, yeah, that kind of stuff. People get read a little bit, huh? But let's get into that golf, right? How about this one, Rick? We talked about it last episode that the Canadian Open has not been won by a Canadian in 69 years. Well, I'll be damned, but Nick Taylor, the Canadian himself, gets the win in playoff fashion in arguably one of the coolest ways to win a playoff, with a 73-foot eagle putt to win it against Tommy Fleetwood. And also, full respect to Tommy Fleetwood. That was one hell of a tournament. We haven't seen him play like that in quite some time. So that was really cool to see out of him, because he's usually, and we talked about this before on the podcast, he's been doing that stuff over on the European side all the time. The man gets wins over there like it's a
his job.
You know? Like it's his job. but it was good to see on the PGA side him getting some momentum like that. But man, when that Nick Taylor putt dropped, dude, that was awesome. Oh my gosh.
Look, I'm not a betting man anymore.
Right.
But if you had asked me going into that playoff how the tournament was going to end, I probably would have put money on it being a long putt, because going into the playoff, we already had 250-plus foot putts made by other guys this weekend.
Yeah.
Like, putts were just going in from everywhere. We had – wasn't there another 70-plus footer Texas wedge from someone?
Yeah, I think on either Friday or Saturday there was. I don't think it was Saturday, I want to say. But yeah, I mean, obviously the greens were very readable. You know, which is a good thing. Could be a bad thing for some people. Some people like to see, you know, these guys get dominated on the greens here. Okay, let's see what the average putting numbers were here. Yeah, so the field was positive in strokes gained putting, about a half point positive in strokes gained putting. So the entire field was having some success with the putter. One of them being Tommy Fleetwood and Nick Taylor, both I think first and second in those categories. So look, the drive for show, putt for dough thing, it does hold some validity. Like obviously for professionals. For you and your buddies, just hit the shit out of the ball and three putt and walk away. You're going to be fine.
You're going to hit it out of bounds anyway, so just pull your driver.
Yeah, you know, it does not matter, okay? But, man, that it's really – the reason I think it's so cool is obviously because he's Canadian and the drought is over. But one of my favorite things is, like, listening to the calls of that putt. And, man, especially the – I don't know if it was Canadian radio or something like that, but – the one call was like, the drought is over. The drought is over. I was getting electrified. I was like, I'm not even Canadian, and I'm in 100%.
Right. Yeah.
One of my favorite nuances, and I don't know if you noticed this, but do you know how you know, NHL ice hockey boards, how they kind of look with the yellow stripe at the bottom and like the very thin blue stripe on the top?
Yeah.
They had that like in the tee boxes.
Oh.
Where they put the advertisements, they had that kind of look, so it made them look like hockey boards. I was like, that's a nice little nod to Canadian culture right there. I was thoroughly impressed by the entire tournament this year. You know, in the years past, I haven't like gotten like really excited about the Canadian Open, but this year I was truly impressed with how it was run, how the course looked, the guys were playing so well, the putts were dropping, which is always fun to watch putts go down. But I think we have to talk about it because, I mean, he's been in the news nonstop, right? Is another Rory McIlroy collapse. Yeah. He goes a Thursday, what was it? Thursday 71, Saturday 67, or a Friday 67, Saturday 66. Was he tied for the lead at that point?
I believe so. If not second.
Yeah. I mean, he was right there, top five. And then here we go. Sunday comes, even par on the day. Obviously not the worst score of the day, but not even close to the best scores of the day. We know it's hard to win on the tour. We get that. We know that Sundays are hard. I mean, we feel like every time we talk about somebody winning, it's like, oh, but somebody else had the 54 hole lead. You know, it's hard to win on the PGA Tour on Sundays. But when you're Rory McIlroy and you're that guy, you're supposed to be that guy.
Yeah.
It's becoming a little disturbing how frequently this is happening, right?
Yeah, definitely. Not to make this podcast entirely about conspiracy theories, but if you want to get into it, we can. I think Rory had a lot more to do with the Live PGA thing than people think. Just based on the fact that he can't win on a Sunday. Like, if they were to have it be three rounds like the Live Tour did, he would have won so many tournaments this year. Or at least he would have been much closer to winning so many tournaments this year, because he just can't play on Sundays. And I don't know what it is, because this is an event where you should be able to play on Sunday. You don't have a bunch of big names breathing down your throat. Yes, you're in Canada. You're kind of out of where you're usually playing, because they only play like a few times in Canada, I think. What do they play once in Canada?
I think they just play the one time in Canada, and then the rest are United States.
So it's like you're going into a different country. It's a little bit farther away probably than some of the other tournaments you have to go to. Like, but there's not that competition, and there's not that stress and pressure that you should have. Now, maybe he has the stress and pressure from what's going on with the merger that's happening.
Right.
But like you said, when you're that guy, you got to be able to close out on a Sunday.
Yeah, and especially because you're right. He is that guy. He's been that guy since the split happened. The PGA Tour gave him the crown and was like, this is our guy. He's going to be our brave leader. And, you know, he was that, especially from a media standpoint. He was, you know, very well spoken, very good at what he was doing. And then to just get stabbed in the back like this by the PGA Tour, that's obviously going to rattle you for sure. Like, don't get me wrong, but at the end of the day, this is about golf, and it's about the golf that you play, especially on the PGA Tour, where you don't have a guaranteed contract. You have to make it, you know, and he walked away with $245,000, which, you know, don't get me wrong, is a lot of fucking money, but he could have been in the $900,000 or $1.6 million range if he had just played a little better on Sunday. I'm going to read you the list of the guys that were ahead of him, and I want you to see if you can name one guy that's better than Rory McIlroy. So, Andrew Novak, Justin Rose, Mark Hubbard, Eric Cole, CT Pan, Tyrrell Hatton, Aaron Rye, Tommy Fleetwood, Nick Taylor.
I mean, realistically, should be none of them.
No, should be none of them. And obviously, we get it. Like, it's golf is a very week in, week out kind of kind of game, which is why we enjoy, you know, watching it. Pretty much anyone can win, anybody that tees it up, you know, like Harry Higgs was T12, baby. Like, let's not forget that bit, huh? But like, you have to be better than that when you're Rory. And there's a lot of people out there, I'm gonna reference one fan that we do know, who are saying that Rory's never gonna win another major, and he's washed up, and he's just never gonna get back to it. We've seen him struggle before. Remember last year where he ripped his shirt off his body?
Yeah.
Because he was having the same issues where the man just could not win on Sundays. And what'd he do? But he went ahead and won the FedEx Cup. You know, like, there's enough time in the season for him to turn this ship around. But this has got to be concerning, specifically because the time that it's happening with this merger going on, with all the issues happening with the PGA Tour, with the ownership of Jay Monahan and the Saudi government being involved now monetarily with the PGA Tour. You know, there's interesting that he said he feels like He feels like the sacrificial lamb. And that was a direct quote from him. Because of all the effort that he put in publicly and behind the scenes supporting the tour. And you have to think that that's got to be one of the major reasons that he's struggling this much.
Yeah.
And there's just no conceivable way to me that this isn't heavily weighing on his mind.
Inconceivable.
yeah. I'm a Sicilian. It's inconceivable. but God, fuck, I love that movie. God. But you have to really kind of take a wider lens to it. I think that's what he needs to do in the situation. Take a wider lens and realize that it might sound like a bit rude, but it's not all about you, right? Like, what's happening with the PGA Live stuff is not a direct slight to you. No one's targeting you specifically. Nobody's has it out for you. They're doing their own thing. You just happen to be a part of the company and a big part of the company. And that's why, obviously, he's taking this so hard. But if you keep performing like this on Sundays and faltering on the weekends, it's going to be a bad look for you as far as like where your stance is on tour. And people are really going to start questioning if you still have it. And then you won't be the face of the tour anymore. You'll just be one of the guys, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's plenty of other dudes like JT, Jordan Spieth, John Rahm, Scottie Scheffler, that the tour could turn to and be like, this is our new guy now. Because Rory just can't seem to get it done. If you're the PGA Tour and you kind of see what's going on right now, obviously not Jay Monahan, because who knows if he'll be making decisions for much longer. We'll get into that a little bit. Do you start looking elsewhere for a face of the tour?
I don't think so quite yet. I think once the merger happens, you look for a new face of the new collective. Right. Like as long as the tours are still separate, I think you just ride it out. But I think once you get that collective going, you find, I don't know, like probably in all honesty, a Scottie Scheffler, like someone like that, a young superstar, you know, is going to be around for a while. You find a guy like that, you make him the face. Even like a John Rahm, who's like a little bit older, but like still pretty young, still has a good amount of good years in him. A guy like him, when the merger happens, you pick a new guy, and then this is your new face. Rory's still there. He still obviously probably helps with decision-making on players, like as far as players are concerned, but you don't keep him as the face, I don't think.
Right. And I agree. There's just, because there's so much talent elsewhere on the tour, specifically when you look at John Rahm and Scottie Scheffler, and then obviously the talent that's going to be coming back from the Live guys. I mean, Brooks Koepka's back, basically. You have other guys on that tour like Cam Smith that are, you know, young and talented players that are coming back. If he can't right the ship, I think you have to look elsewhere. Or Tiger comes back and this isn't an issue anymore, right?
Yeah.
But definitely interesting to see how that's going to go from, you know, a publicity standpoint for sure. But before we get into more of the drama that is this merger, the Canadian Open and the kind of way that it concluded with a Canadian winning for the first time in 63 years with Adam Hadwin getting absolutely tackled.
So funny.
Getting absolutely bodied by a security guard, because I watched the video. He didn't have any credentials with him. I don't really judge the security guard for tackling him, right?
No, I mean, he was just doing his job. Like, some dude. He's not thinking, oh, maybe this is a professional golfer friend who's coming to celebrate. He's thinking, look at this jackass with his champagne popping it on the green like he owns the joint. And he just tackles him. Perfect form tackle, by the way.
Fantastic tackle.
Dude clearly played football or rugby at some point in his life because it was a great tackle. And props to Adam for not dropping the champagne.
Right?
That was so impressive.
I got to tell you, all around, great form tackle.
Yeah.
Possession was kept by the runner. The tackle was good, right on the hip, shoulder to contact, wrapped up, took him down. All around great form tackle right there. Which is very funny that also the way that Adam Hadwin's like taking it is also great, because there's a chance, like, you know, some people might not be as receptive to getting absolutely bodied on a green as much as Adam Hadwin, but it looks like he's having fun with it at the Los Angeles Country Club for the U.S. Open in his locker. They put a hard hat and a like a construction vest so that he can be seen. And he tweeted out, he was like, "Thank you for concerning with my safety." and that's the kind of cool stuff that with how it ended, with a Canadian winning for the first time in 69 years, like it was a nice reprieve from the drama throughout the rest of the golf world, right? It felt like at least for a day that Sunday you could remove yourself from all that and just be excited for the country that was obviously super excited about it. I mean, the videos from the 18th green where everybody was going nuts, so cool to watch. This is the kind of stuff that makes you want to continue to watch golf. None of that extra drama, you know, and all that stuff. But like, it one of those things being, it's just nice to not have to think about the LIV merger. It's nice.
Yeah.
Hey guys, we're just going to take an aside here to hear from our partners. First up is ShankItGolf.com. Go ahead and visit their website. They got all sorts of things for you. They got golf towels, golf polos, stuff to mark your balls. They got all sorts of hats. They have everything that you're going to need to look your best on the golf course and feel your best on the golf course. Go ahead and at checkout, use code FTT15 for 15% off your order. You're not only helping yourself save money, but you're helping us get a little bit of that scratch on the side so we can bring you the best content that we can. Again, go ahead and check out ShankItGolf.com for all your golf apparel needs. If you haven't heard before, Dr. John Murray is now a Titleist performance expert. That's right, he is someone who can help improve your body's swing connection. His medical background plus his Titleist certification can help you improve your golf game however you want. You want to have less pain? Dr. Murray can help. You want to create longevity in your career? He can help. Sick of getting out driven by your buddies? He can do that too. Check out Dr. John Murray at jmurraytpi on Instagram or reach out to him via email at jmurraytpi@gmail.com. Once again, that's jmurraytpi and jmurraytpi@gmail.com. I've already gone to him for my first screening. It went so well. I really felt like we identified some of the negative portions of my golf swing. I've already started doing my stretches to improve my golf game, and I'm interested to see how that translates into my second session. Go ahead and check him out on those platforms I listed already. He's great. He's great at what he does. All right, back to the episode. But guess what? We're talking about it now. The LIV merger is obviously still pretty much the biggest news in the golf world right now. Just some extra stuff to touch on here that we didn't get to in the last episode when we kind of gave the big overview. We can start getting into a little bit into specifics now. According to some rumblings here, the way it's going to go is that the LIV Tour is going to kind of fizzle into the PGA Tour, and there isn't going to be that structure with those teams anymore. This is from Josh Sens, who's a writer at golf.com. He said, "My best guess is that the LIV Tour goes away in name, at least, along with those ridiculously named teams. The team concept will live on in the same form, but it will be a small part of the big picture. The overreaching structure will be a global golf circuit with a select number of top-tier events for an elite crop of players and a relegation system similar to that of the Premier League in soccer, through which the bottom guys drop out and new guys rise each year. As for returning, I think that's the wrong way to think about it." So this is just some guesses from some writers who know a bit more than we would. But how do you feel about that? So obviously we get rid of the team names thing and that kind of stuff, but we retain the team aspect, and then there's a built-in relegation system now instead of the you lose your tour card and then you have to earn it back. You just get relegated with the chance to get promoted again.
I kind of like the idea of the relegation system. It still promotes the competition and makes these guys want to play their best all the time, which is what we're looking for. As far as the team names and everything goes, but still keeping the teams, I'm hoping that just means that we're getting better team names and better team logos as opposed to the ones that Liv had. Not that they all were bad. Like Smash Golf Club was a pretty good one, but like
I liked that logo. That was yeah. I also liked the Aces logo. I thought that Aces, was a very classy yeah. logo.
There was a few that were good. Most of them were eh. So I'm hoping that what that means is that they're just rebranding teams and we're going to get different cool new logos.
Right.
Because I'm a sucker for a cool logo.
Yeah, and also I'm a sucker for if they could just have merchandise.
Yeah.
For the love of everything holy, if you drop this bag on getting teams, on getting new logos, on basically reworking how the PGA Tour has been done, you now have something to sell to people that yeah. isn't directly copywriting somebody's name or likeness.
Yeah.
You have to sell that. Because then maybe, just maybe down the line, you don't need the Saudis' money because you're selling yeah. merchandise. You
I got know? A question.
Like,
I got a question. If we're doing right. a relegation system in like a lower tier, like kind of group, if the players are dropping into a lower tier, do we think they're still going to be like on the same team, just in the minor league system of that team, for lack of a better comparison?
Now, that's an interesting little twist that I kind of love a little
because
bit. Like, so when you,
because
yeah.
if that's the case, then we have a draft.
We have a draft and we have call-ups due to injury.
Yes.
I like that idea a lot.
A golf draft?
Yeah. That
would be wild.
That would be crazy.
It would be so interesting like for sure. I don't really right. know if it would work that well, but I'm just curious because if we are doing a relegation system, that means that somehow we got to keep these guys like in the same area. You know what I mean? Like we right. can't have someone, for example, from the Aces dropping down in the relegation system. And then the next time they come up, they're on Smash Golf Club. Like that just doesn't work.
No, it doesn't make any sense. And also like if there was someone to be relegated, like say there's three guys that get relegated from the same team. But yeah. other teams don't have any guys that get relegated. You have to replace that team's players. You got to replenish yeah. from the system down low. So, like, yeah, I'm 100% on board for that. That sounds like a really cool idea, like a little cool twist to that. And also, that adds to this whole team aspect, right? So, basically, yeah. you do kind of what Liv did, at least to start.
Mm-hmm.
You give really good players, like the really important guys, your Scottie Schefflers, your John Rahms, your Rory McIlroys, for example, you give them teams and do a fantasy draft. And that's just yeah. the first ever PGA draft. And from then on, now you have established teams and it'll go forward like that. Like I want trades. I want yeah. I want people retaining money so that they could deal this guy over there
yeah.
to get this draft pick in 2024. Like that is the type of sports energy that I feel like if you bring to golf, you could get such a more vast fan base. Cause there are people that are fan of sports that realistically don't even follow the sport, but they yeah. play fantasy football because there's analytics, there's mm-hmm. stats, there's trading, there's stuff to do outside of just watching and enjoying yeah. the sport. You could totally do that with golf.
Yeah. Well, think about it too. Like you don't follow basketball.
I don't.
But when the draft comes around, you know who has the first pick. You know that it's a draft lottery system,
yep.
which I think would be a cool idea for this.
Always good.
Like, there's things that you're, like, at least somewhat keeping up with. And I think if you pull all of the best ideas from every other major sport, I think it could be a really cool idea.
Right. And another little twist here that I just thought about. Have a salary cap. So obviously, instead of every tournament being a paid purse, take all of that money, split it up evenly throughout each team, and that is your salary cap. That is the money you are allowed to spend on acquiring players and contracts for those players.
Yeah.
That would be cool, man.
It would be.
That'd be fucking cool. Obviously in the first year, it's going to have to be a bit different because you got to establish captains who are drafting, et cetera, et cetera. So the captain they get guaranteed 5-year contracts to be on that team, right?
Okay.
And then they'll do their draft to basically the GM coach of that team. And then after that part, that's just a team now.
Yeah.
Like, you can consider the captain to like be the captain, but what after 2 years, the captain's doesn't have the voice of the room anymore, right? They want to give another guy the seat. That could happen, right? Mm. I think there's a lot that can be done with this here, especially now, given that there's not this vast separation of, you know, morality and ideas, right?
Yes. Like,
there's, it's all inclusive. Obviously, you know, I don't think everybody's super sold on where this money's coming from. I mean, I most certainly am not, but I don't think we have a choice. That's the only thing. So it's either.
Which unfortunately is exactly what they were going for.
But... Yeah, I mean, they kind of nailed their plan for what it was
worth. They did exactly what they wanted to. But, by the way, shout out to Messi real quick. Did you see that?
Oh, the Inter-Miami thing?
The money that he got offered from the Saudis to go play over there? 1.9, yeah. Was it billion? With billion. A B?
With a B.
And he was like, nah, I'm just going to go to Florida.
I'm going to go to Florida, play there, have half ownership in the team, and then once I retire, become their GM. And I was like, that's a hell of a contract, right?
$1.9 billion.
Could you imagine looking $1.9 billion in the face and saying no?
No.
Like, I think I'd physically seize and pass away if I said no to $1.9 billion.
I'd have to be a trillionaire to say no to a $1.9 billion.
Also, why couldn't we just commit to two?
Yeah.
You're that far.
What's another billion?
You're so close. You are right there. Why are we doing 1.9? Just do the two. It's a nice round number. There's no decimal.
Yeah.
It is what it is. But, yeah, that's wild. I don't know if we're ever going to see that kind of money here on the tour.
No, probably not. I just remember seeing 1.9 billion the other day. I was like, I don't know how you say no to that. I really don't.
Look, again, we don't want to get too far into the conspiracy theories, but I think somebody's got to talk about the amount of money Saudi Arabia is throwing into the sports world. It's getting a bit fucking ridiculous. But we keep moving into the golf realm. So that was just a little interesting tidbit there about how the merging is actually going to kind of go. Jay Monahan, got to talk about him. He's getting criticized very heavily for the way that he handled the situation. Apparently the players meeting that they had the night of last week's podcast went incredibly poorly for our man Jay. A reporter tweeted out that it was about a 90-10 split, 90 being negative, 10% being positive throughout the players. One player even calling for the resignation of Jay Monahan, which actually got a standing applause.
Which is hilarious.
Which is very funny. So that's definitely an extra wrinkle moving forward, because I'm not quite sure what the power the players have is. I don't know. Like, I know they have a players association, something along those lines, but I don't know how much power that association has.
Yeah.
They have the ability to vote him out.
I hope so, because that would be hilarious.
And not only would it be hilarious, but it would add such an extra little wrinkle to this whole thing, because Jay Monahan, obviously being one of the orchestrators of this merge, then just all of a sudden not being there changes the game completely, because then it really depends. If the players have the power to vote him out, they hopefully have the power to appoint who goes in.
Yeah.
What could be fucked up is they have the power to vote him out, but then it's just up to the Saudis to bring somebody in.
That would be a problem.
And that would be a huge, huge problem. So at that point, depending on the amount of power the players have, it's almost a pick your poison situation. Would you rather just stick it out with Jay Monahan because he's been the leader of the PGA Tour for so long? Or do you want a new voice? And are you okay with that new voice being appointed by somebody else that isn't you? You know,
blackmail, like, Monahan, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel
you want
like
to be unemployed, or do you want to do what we want to do this time?
Right. Yeah. I mean, he really does have to stick out for the players a bit more. He's just completely turned on all of them, and they know it too. They're not dumb.
What's the accountability too? Like, the presser about it, He was like, oh, well, the initial meeting that it was talked about, I wasn't even there for. Okay. There was multiple other meetings after that, I would assume. Right. And you didn't say anything about those. So were you at those? Because you could have shut it down.
Yeah, especially like when he goes, oh, I wasn't at the first meeting. I was like, I'm pretty sure this wasn't decided in one single meeting.
Yeah, and if it was, I can't imagine something this large was decided in one meeting.
Something with this amount of money attached to it probably isn't getting decided in one single meeting. So that means, Jay, you attended other meetings and you still said not a word. You didn't even tell your, you know, guy in charge as far as the players are concerned. Didn't let Rory know at all. And obviously there's all these reports about different players from different organizations knowing things were going on behind the scenes. I really need somebody to expand a bit more on that. What did you all know? So Brooks said something, Rory said something, Phil said something. Like, what did you guys know? Did you guys know different things?
Yeah.
Because Greg Norman, the president and CEO of the LIV Tour, said he had no idea this was happening. So now what? Yeah, who did know and who knew what, you know?
He said, she said right now, we don't have any like concrete information of who knew what and when they knew what. It's just what everybody's saying. And we just got to take it for what it is at this point.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much everything that there is to talk about is hearsay at this point. No one's like, I haven't seen any like records or statements by any means about how the talks wound up going. But so in your honest opinion, you think that Jay Monahan's still going to be the president? They're not going to vote him out?
Unfortunately, I think it's best for the players right now to keep him in, just because, like you said, I feel like if they do force him to resign, there's like a 95% chance the Saudis just bring in whoever they want.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's like a 100% chance they just like go like, oh, okay, you won. Him gone, that's great. Yeah, you guys don't have the power to vote somebody in, though, so that just gives us autonomy now. Yeah, that sounds like the fuckery that could ensue if that were to happen, which kind of sucks. But also that makes me think they probably don't have the power to vote him out in the first place, because I really don't think that Players Association has the amount of voting power as other sports do.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, the NFLPA is a very strong union. The MLBPA is a very strong union. You know, there's a reason those sports, what it feels like, always come close to striking for some reason.
Yeah.
That's because the unions are so strong. The fact that, you know, I don't think there's a solid union for the PGA Tour players is probably very negatively affecting them right now.
Yeah.
With all this going on. But I think that's why... And we can get into this into a different episode, but I think that's why they should probably start thinking about forming a players union, especially with this merger specifically. They got to get something on contract.
Oh yeah, for sure.
They have to, or they're just going to get screwed. They are.
Yeah, you got to have everything in writing at this point.
All righty, to keep moving forward, obviously we got to talk about the U.S. Open coming up this week at the Los Angeles Country Club and those storylines going along with it. We'll get to the power rankings in just a bit, but let's hammer through some of these big U.S. Open storylines. First things first, we have to talk about this. Brooks Koepka. Could he win a third U.S. Open, a sixth major, a second this season? Without even a second this season, without even being a player on the PGA Tour, I think yes.
It sounds crazy, but I don't see any reason why not.
I see no reason to doubt it, to be honest with you.
He's been playing in the last two majors like he's a man on a mission.
Yep.
And we've seen him have success at the U.S. Open twice in a row. It is a matter of fact. So. I don't see any reason why not, to be honest. And I kind of want to see it.
It would kind of be awesome, right? That would kind of really rock.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of those things where if it were to happen, it doesn't change the landscape of golf. But at the same time, it's like, what could have been if he didn't feel like he's never going to get back, right? Like, what could it have been if he didn't take the money at LIV because he thought that might be his only option due to his injuries?
Yeah.
Well, how many wins could he have? Where could he be in the official world golf rankings, you know?
Well, the good news for him is his legacy is really not going to be affected at all because of the merger.
Mm-hmm.
So 25 years down the line, no one's going to mention that one of his major victories was while he was on the LIV Tour and not on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
It's just going to be grouped into his other wins.
It's very much just going to be a blip on his like career trajectory.
Yeah.
It's going to be like, exactly. Oh, those 2 years were kind of weird, but made a lot of money. So
yeah, exactly. So for him, that's really good.
Yeah.
Because like I said, it's not going to affect how people view him in the long term at all.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is probably pissed about it. Rory's probably pissed about it. Oh my God,
everybody is probably so angry, especially if he wins this weekend.
Yeah.
Oh my.
I expect to see him in the top 25. It seems like we have old Brooks back for the most part.
Right.
And it just comes with confidence and rest, which he's gotten on the LIV Tour, which is why he went there. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I expect a top 25 out of him for sure, if not top 10.
Yeah, right now he is at 17-2 odds to win the tournament, which works itself out to -250.
Those are pretty good odds.
he's the clear favorite to win it, which makes a lot of sense to me. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
As to why he's the clear favorite, because especially with how he played in the Masters and the PGA Championship, obviously winning the PGA Championship. I mean, we always knew he showed up during majors, but this almost magnified it because of the fact that he isn't on the PGA Tour, that he's over on the LIV Tour. This magnified his ability to just show up when the stars are out and the brights are the brightest, or the lights are the brightest. the brights are the brightest, you know what I'm saying? He will show up and he will dominate. And I'm probably going to pick him in fantasy golf this week just because when it comes to a major, we get three picks instead of two. I can't think of a better third pick right there.
Yeah. I mean,
I really can't.
Like I said, two US Opens back to back at one point, playing great in majors so far this year. I don't see any reason that he doesn't keep it going to some degree.
Another storyline to kind of focus on here. Phil Mickelson, he's kind of been kind of dancing around the fact that he knows something pretty big in the media recently. And then it dropped that the merger was happening and he has yet to have media time at a PGA sanctioned event since the merger. Do you think that Phil Mickelson, being the crazy old man that he is going to spill some sort of big old news or something like that, that he knew it the whole entire time, that the Saudis have been planning this since they started LIV, that Jay Monahan was in on it, that, you know, even Rory McIlroy knew what was going on?
It would be wild if he was like, Jay Monahan was in on this since the beginning.
That, I think you'd,
there would break, be mutiny.
You'd break golf.
There would you'd be break mutiny. Golf. If he was like, if he was like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when LIV started to become a thing, yeah, they talked to Jay Monahan. The whole plan all along was within the next 3 years to merge into the two sports for money.
I got to tell you, not the worst idea. If I'm thinking about monetarily speaking and getting people to pay attention to golf, kind of genius, super fucked up to your players.
Yeah. Jay Monahan, if that were to come out, would have to fake his own death and go live on a random island in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. That would be.
He might just have to move to Saudi Arabia at that point. That might be the only place where he's safe.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it's one of those situations where could it happen? Of course it could happen. Anything could happen, right? But I'm truly expecting there to be some news coming out of Phil specifically because of the way, like, in any of his press conferences, he's been like dancing around that he knows something.
Yeah.
And then again, he could just be doing that because he likes to cause fuckery. That's like one of his main things that he enjoys doing. So he might actually know nothing, which is, there's a huge chance of that.
Yeah. There's a massive chance of that.
One more thing of note here for the U.S. Open. How do we think the Southern California kids are going to do? Obviously, it's the Los Angeles Country Club. They've played it all the time, high school, college, etc. Guys like Max Homa and Colin Morikawa. Let's not forget the last time Colin Morikawa was in a major in California, he won the thing. And Max Homa always seems to play well on the West Coast, especially in California. Do you see either of these guys getting a top 25? Hell, maybe even a top 10.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you got to give the advantage when they have it. Whenever Jordan Spieth is in Texas, we give him the advantage. And Jordan Spieth, quote unquote, came back in Texas. That was his first win back after a 2.5 year drought. You got to give the guys the home field advantage when they're there. And the guys that played college ball, which I'm going to call it, even though it's just golf, because that's just what came out of my mouth.
Yeah, the guys play college ball out there. You know what I mean? I love it so much.
I said home field advantage, and then it just kind of came out. But the guys who played college golf out there, you got to give them the advantage because they probably played that course more than anyone else.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that they're both members at that course. So I think, like, even still to this day, they play it often, you know. Yeah. So that's going to be an interesting wrinkle, because I don't know if a lot of people are going to be picking, you know, Max Homa or Colin Morikawa to really show up in this tournament and you know, be the guy. But, you know, I think there's always a chance for a hometown guy to perform well, specifically at courses that they know. And my eyes are all locked on Max Homa.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I think he's got a major in him in the next 2 years or so. And this could definitely be it just because of where it is. I think that would be awesome. Also, just great guy to root for. Sorry, go ahead. What's up? Go ahead.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
I was just saying, great guy to root for. Just always fun to get behind him.
Let me ask you this.
Gotcha.
You're out at a Muni on a Saturday, mm-hmm. and you're talking to this guy. You're asking what he's about, and he goes, "Yeah, I played college ball for a few years." What do you assume?
Basketball.
When does golf come on that list? Because apparently for me, it's first. So
yeah. So for me, when golf comes on that list, after he plays college ball, it's probably going to have to be a couple of conversations had, maybe by hole 16 when he's like, yeah, you know, I was playing this course in college, and you know, we won a championship or something. I'm gonna be like, hey, so when you said college ball,
I would totally tell people that if I played college golf, I would totally say that. Be like, yeah, I played college ball for 4 years.
We should
won a national championship. They'd be like, oh, you played for Saban? No,
no, the equivalent though, the golf equivalent. Yeah, could you imagine just. We have to tell Dawson, right? Like, Dawson's got to know this.
Start telling people that he's played college ball.
Yeah, you know, played college ball at Temple. You know, T for Temple U. It's like, oh, you know Hassan Reddick? It's like, I mean, no. I know he
was. Well, I know of him.
I know his name, if that's helpful. All righty. So those are some of the storylines to, you know, keep you interested on things not including the merger at the U.S. Open. Well, Rick, buddy, it's looking like Rob has yet to drop those power rankings. Because it always seems like when we need him most, he always comes up short. Pretty much.
He's like the Avatar. Time.
He is. When the world needed him most, he vanished. So what I do have for us here is the odds checker. Top five golfers. So this is just based on Vegas odds alone.
Okay.
We have that top five here for you. So I'm going to read those to you in no specific order. Put them in order.
Okay.
This is a heavy hitting top five. Patrick Cantlay, John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Brooks Koepka, Scottie Scheffler.
I'm going to go Cantlay, Rory, Scheffler, Rahm, Koepka from 5-1.
Dude. So close.
So close. Who did I switch?
So close. So actually you mixed up Cantlay and Rory.
Ah.
Yeah. But if it helps, their odds are only plus 200 away from each other. So it's Rory McIlroy at plus 1700 odds, Patrick Cantlay at plus 1500 odds, Scottie Scheffler at 1200 odds, John Rahm at 1100 odds, and Brooks Koepka at plus 750. Not fucking
big
bad.
Big favorite.
And honestly, I get it.
Yeah.
I really think that there's a, usually I think, like, obviously, you know, when it comes to your better golfers, they always have a better odds to win any tournament that they involve themselves in. But yeah, usually in golf, it's fairly, you know, anybody can win any week. I really think there's got to be like a 25% chance that he's winning.
Yeah, there's a good chance, it seems like. Yeah. I'm trying to see. He got second at the Masters, right?
Yeah.
And then he won.
The PGA. Yeah.
Is there a world where Brooks Koepka is at least top two in every major this year?
I mean, that world can most certainly exist. He's halfway there. Yeah. And if he does it a third time, like, whether or not it's a win, it may be just like top fives. There's definitely a world where he can top five all the majors. We know this, though. Like, we've known this his entire career. The dude is a major player.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he has a waste management win. He's got other wins on tour that, you know, obviously he does try and win when he plays golf. But, like, Brooks Koepka in majors is a different animal. And that animal is here this year. No matter if he's on the PGA Tour or not. That he is around and he's lurking.
Yeah.
He's one of my heavy favorites. Besides Brooks Koepka, though, who do you have to win? Who do you want to win? Can be the same guy.
I feel like it's a cop out, but I never feel like I can count Scottie Scheffler out. He's just so good.
He's so damn good at golf. So damn.
And he just doesn't seem rattled by anything.
No, he's calm as a cucumber all the time. And again, a guy that you can root for.
Yeah.
Just an all-around good dude. Obviously, I feel like we can't count out John Rahm either. Mm-hmm. He's also incredible. I'm leaning Max Homa, though. I want it. He's in the top 10 in odds here at plus 3,000. So,
a little gut feeling there.
Just a little gut feeling that somebody from Southern California is going to get it done. And if it does wind up being Colin Morikawa and he's 2-for-2 for majors in California, so be it.
That's just information that we have going into the next major that ends up in California.
And I feel like a lot of people don't know how much that actually matters in golf. Like like your hometown, the amount of times you've played that course. It just happened. Nick Taylor just won the Canadian Open.
Yeah.
You know, and did it with other guys in the field who are like tops in the world. Right.
Yeah.
So it does matter a lot. And Max Homa and Colin Morikawa always seem to play well on the West Coast. So I'm really looking at those two for a cool win. I think it would be awesome if Max Homa was able to get a win at the Los Angeles Country Club, considering, like, I think he's from the Los Angeles area. I think that's one of his home courses. He's like a Dodgers fan, etc. So I think that would be really cool for him. All right, Rick, unless you got any other golf news, that's going to do it for this old episode.
Yeah, I got nothing.
All righty. As always, folks, thank you so much for listening. We always appreciate you guys hitting play, listen to the episodes. What would be great as well is if you could hit follow on our social medias, on Instagram at @FromTheTips_pod and on Twitter at @FTT_pod. We've been a little bit more active on both of those things, trying to deliver some news throughout the week for you. So check the Instagram stories. That's always where you usually see us reposting things that we find. Check the Twitter if there's any major news going on. We'll be retweeting stuff sometimes. So hit follow on those and track us and let us know if you guys want us to do anything. We'll always answer DMs for any of the fans. So go ahead and reach out to us on there. And as always, thank you so much. And we out.
Thanks, guys. See you later.